Drunken Cast Podcast, the ultimate podcast for the ultimate fan.
Now, here's AtlantaFalcons.com's own Jay Adams and Daniel Cox.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome in to the Falcon Cast Podcast. Hello.
Hey.
There's a face we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, I feel like I've been hibernating.
Become a hermit lately. I feel like we should all hibernate.
Yeah.
It's after this winter. Daniel is back with us.
It's great to be back.
After having to miss last week, and boy, I mean, what a harrowing event for you.
It was it's definitely something that you see news-related events around the globe, around the nation, you know, and you're like, oh, man, I feel bad for those people.
Yeah.
And then you find yourself in one of those situations where it's like, wow, this is really bad.
Yeah.
And you, I don't know, you come out changed. I'm a different person than I was 2 weeks ago.
I believe it. And for fans who didn't watch last week, you know, we had a heck of a snowstorm. Well,
it was a situation.
Yeah. It was a snowstorm for here that just crippled the city when it came to traffic and commutes and things like that. And the snow turned to ice, and then that turned to anarchy, really, in a
kind
lot of cases.
Yeah. Yep.
And Daniel was right smack dab in the middle of all.
I was. So this was last Tuesday.
Yes.
In fact, I was supposed to be up here around 1 or 2 in the afternoon for a meeting, and schools let out at around noon. My son got out of school at noon.
Yep.
And I realized, okay, well, I need to get him.
Mm-hmm.
Began the process. I left my house at noon. I live about 25 minutes from where he goes to school.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to get there.
Yeah.
I never got there, in fact.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So this is the first time I'm even hearing this story.
There was some misunderstandings in terms of who was with me, I guess. But
okay.
I never got to pick up my son, but there was a significant effort to get there. It was just one of those things, like with traffic and everything else, couldn't get him.
Yeah.
His mother managed to get there before me, so that was good. Then I decided, well, I need to go get my girlfriend. I need to try to help her out.
Yeah.
And I've lived in Atlanta for, 12, 13 years now, always kind of around the perimeter.
Yeah.
So I feel like I know that area pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up, it was north on 85, and it took me forever to get to her.
Yeah.
But I finally got her, and we went back home, and it just took forever. And I felt like I shouldn't have done that. I kind of put myself in that situation, but, you know, all of us in some ways did, because everyone just went out all at once, you know?
Because, and I talked to Morgan Andrew, who is our social media coordinator, and, you know, she was also in the middle of it. My digital media intern, Daniela, was also a part of it. It took her 26 hours from the time she left here until the time she got home. So there were people who were involved in this that say you're driving home from
work,
but you're not driving, and it turns from a commute into a survival situation in some cases.
Well,
and
because you're on the road, and you realize, I mean, traffic, it seemed like everyone in Atlanta was on the road.
Yeah.
And that was the huge problem as the ice became, you know, significant.
Yeah.
And it is. It's. Do I want to trade movement progress on the road for stopping to get something to eat?
Right. That's what it came down to.
And then it's like, I'm sorry.
No.
You have to decide, when am I going to change my plan?
Yeah.
And my girlfriend, God bless her, she 8 miles away from home. 10 hours into this trip, she's like, "Let's start walking." And I'm like, "No, can't do that yet. Let's keep going." And I kind of had a point in my mind where if I can get here, I'll walk the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And I got 3.5 miles from home about midnight, and we stopped the car in a neighborhood, and because we were waiting to go up a hill, and it was like waiting.
Yeah.
You're waiting in line, and these other people were failing trying to get up it. So it's like, I'm kind of screwed either way at this point.
Yeah.
So I stopped it. We walked 3.5 miles home. The the smartest thing I did all day that morning, for some strange reason, I wore two pairs of pants.
Okay. See, I didn't know that. How did it come to that?
It's something I'd been doing at home anyway, because it was my apartment's kind of drafty.
Okay.
So, you know, I wear like two pairs of sweatpants instead of just one.
Okay. Fair enough.
And that morning I put on a pair of sweatpants, and then I put on like a regular pair of pants over it. So I was prepared, but I have a new appreciation for walking.
Yeah.
I've walked a lot in the last week.
I've talked to people again who are part of that, and like there's like psychological effects that have come from, like, you're in the car and suddenly you're, you know, you come up with on some normal traffic jam here in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And suddenly it becomes a bad situation in your mind.
It's, you know,
can't even imagine.
I intentionally didn't tweet anything.
Yeah.
Because you feel so many different emotions over time. You know, first,
sure.
It's like, I just want to get out of this. I'm like, I'm concerned.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, then it's like, This is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I didn't say anything on Twitter because I was afraid I might say the wrong thing. So.
Well, I would have been live tweeting the heck out of it too. You know me. I would have let every emotion come out over Twitter. But anyway, we're so thankful that everything's okay and that you're back here.
I appreciate you're checking on me a couple times that night.
I felt like a mama bird.
Yeah.
That night.
And that's the other thing is like I had a story to turn in, and I left at noon, so like I didn't do anything that morning. I was just kind of goofing around, and I was like, I'll just work the rest of the afternoon. It's no big deal. No, that didn't happen. And I had a story to turn in, and like around 11 o'clock, I'm like, or 10 o'clock or 9 or whatever it was, just the thought of, well, I still got to go home and work when I emailed you, and you were kind enough to switch things around.
We're always thinking about bringing you guys information.
Oh, absolutely.
If there was ever a doubt on that, we are always, even in some of our most harrowing situations, we're always thinking about bringing you information.
I was thinking about Greg Robinson while I was sitting alone in my car for the
first
half of that trip.
Well, that's as good a segue as ever to get into today's conversation. But again, thankful that you're all safe and sound, and it's just a story now that you can tell people.
Appreciate that.
But all right, so today we're gonna. There's been some scenarios, right? You think about being at number six overall, which is where the Falcons are. There's been some scenarios that have come across in some mock drafts that tend to be either favorable for the Falcons or maybe not so favorable for the Falcons. And so we've got a couple of these scenarios here that we want to talk about. Things that could happen before the number six pick that could be advantageous for the Falcons or may not be. But we're going to talk about them and potentially rank them.
Yeah.
Let's rank them. Okay. So when we talk about these things, we've got to set this up and say, okay, what is the best case scenario for the Falcons?
Yeah.
All right. And so I'll just lead this off with my number one.
Okay.
All right. I think the best case scenario for the Falcons is to have a very tough decision to make at number six.
Yeah.
How that happens is you get a couple of very, very good players that you're trying to decide between at that spot. Now, at number six, it's tough to go wrong because the talent is there. You know, if you miss out on one guy because somebody else took him, it's not like there's going to be a huge drop-off. In theory, you know, obviously 3-4 years from now that'll be the ultimate judge of that.
Right.
But for me, the scenario that's number one most advantageous for the Falcons right now would be four quarterbacks selected between 1 through 5, leaving the two top offensive tackles and defensive end Jadeveon Clowney at number six for the Falcons to select, because you're sitting there, okay, so do I go offensive tackle? Do I go defensive end? And we're talking about this on the way down here is it's a question we brought up in last week's podcast when Matt Moore sat in for you, is would you rather have the next Reggie White or would you rather have the next Jonathan Ogden?
Yeah.
And it's a tough question to answer when you really sit down and think about it. And that's ultimately, in this scenario, what you're trying to determine. And it's like I said, I don't think there's a right answer or there's a more right answer. I think time ultimately is what tells the tale there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you talk about the best possible scenario, I think that one there where you have a selection and you're not kind of shoehorned into one player, I think is probably your best bet.
Yeah, I mean, we all want choices, right?
We all like choices.
Yeah, we love to have choices. So, you know, that scenario, I agree with you. You know, 1 through 5, there's 4 quarterbacks, you know, and that other wild card pick. You know, so, you know, that scenario where you still had those choices of, you know, an offensive tackle or a defensive end, you know, specifically Clowney, that is your best scenario. Because you have that choice. And, you know, I think the best thing that ever happened, or the thing that will continue to be the best thing maybe that can happen to the Falcons draft is, you know, the progression of Carr.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had a good week at the Senior Bowl. Had a pretty good game as well. So that improved his draft stock. So that kind of puts – he becomes that fourth quarterback at the top. And, you know, the quarterbacks kind of have their own rankings. And then we've got, you know, the kind of the top guys that we think, you know, Matthews, Robinson, and Clowney are kind of like the consensus top three players.
Sure.
You know, and having a choice of those guys, it's pretty nice.
That's a good place to be.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're talking about the quarterbacks. You're talking about Bridgewater, Bortles, Carr, and Manziel.
Yeah.
And the more I keep reading, the more I keep hearing about the draft, the more I keep hearing that there are a couple of guys in there that are going to be in the top five.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there are a lot of teams that need a quarterback there. Houston needs a quarterback. St. Louis does not need a quarterback.
Yeah.
But
Jacksonville.
But there could be a team that wants to jump up into number two and get a quarterback. Jacksonville needs a quarterback. Cleveland needs a quarterback. Oakland needs a quarterback.
And then you got a team like Minnesota who thinks around 9, like you talked about jumping up.
So you've got – if there's a run on quarterbacks, okay, you've got a very good situation to be in because you're going to have some really good players that in other drafts could fall to you. The thing I worry about, though, okay, especially if you're talking about a guy like Clowney. Everybody's talking about Clowney. Clowney's the number one – draft prospect this year. That's what everybody's saying. Okay, fine. Let's go off of that assumption. He's your number one guy. All right. There's been some talk that Houston could be interested in him, but I think at the end of the day they're going to go quarterback. That's just me.
Right.
So you think, okay, Clowney, boy, we're sitting at 6. There's this run on quarterbacks. This is really good for us. Well, there's a team right behind us at number 7, Tampa Bay, that could use an edge rusher too.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to think that they like Clowney. So do they trade up? Do you risk, do you sit at 6 and hope that these players are just going to magically fall from the sky down to you? Or do you be more proactive and go get the guy that you want? And that's the thing that I think is going to be really tough for Thomas Dimitroff if he's put in that situation is – things look like, you know, there's going to be 4 quarterbacks taken in the top 5.
Yeah.
Well, that means there's probably a good chance that if Clowney's my guy, he's going to fall to me. But it doesn't explain, you know, somebody coming over the top of you and snagging him.
Yeah.
So if he's your guy, I almost think you got to go get him.
Yeah.
And it's weird because in some other cases.
And that's a costly.
Yes,
you know, you assume you go get him at number 2. You know, I think St. Louis kind of owns the draft.
Yes. Everything, make no mistake about it, you bring up a great point. Everything happens at number 2.
Yeah.
So much hinges off of number 2.
Yeah. Because again, you know, because they're the team that you kind of assume doesn't want one of those 4.
Yeah.
And especially now, I think the days of seeing like a quarterback like the year Aaron Rodgers came out where a top tier quarterback slides all the way, you know, to the end. I don't think we're going to see that anymore with the way that the NFL teams are paying quarterbacks, especially now draft picks in general. Yeah. There's a little more leeway, a little more latitude. They can take a little more of a risk. And I always think about what my favorite draft guy, Mike Mayock, said. He repeatedly says, if there's a guy that you love, a quarterback that you love, regardless of what their rankings and then all the other people say, if you love that guy, you could get him.
Yeah.
So I really feel like you're going to see those four quarterbacks gone, at least in those top six
picks. One way or another, you would think.
Seems like it.
You know? But the thing is, if you're Atlanta, you do have some things to worry about.
Yeah.
As far as is there another team out there that knows that we're targeting, you know, these couple of guys, whoever they may be, and they want one of them, they're going to go get them. I think there's you worry about sitting at number six.
No, I hear you.
There's a guy that you really, really, really want,
and if you assume that guy is clowny, you have to ask yourself. And this is a question I'm sure that they're asking, just across the way there. I lost my train of thought. If Clowney's your guy and you go up to number two to get him, is he worth losing that second round pick?
Yeah, because that's going to be a part of the deal.
Yeah, because the second round, you kind of assume, especially where the Falcons are, that second round pick is going to be a starter quality player as well.
Because it's really like having an extra first rounder.
Kind of.
Because you're right on the cusp of the end of the first round there.
Mm-hmm.
So that second round pick is more valuable than I think it's ever been. And there's some really good talent that should be there. And you're talking about guys that, you know, you don't know what's going to happen in the draft. We could sit here and we could talk about it
absolutely
for hours and hours and hours and still never peg down the right scenario for what's going to happen in those 32 picks. But there's always a group of about five or six or seven guys that should have gone in the first round that find themselves at the top of the second, and boy, you really want to be there.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So this is it's a good problem to have in that you know you're going to get some talent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
But man, there are some hard decisions that need to be made here.
Yeah.
Like really hard.
Yeah. And then the other decision, the third scenario here is, you know, that scenario where maybe some of the guys you like, your top guys, are off the board. Do you trade back and try to pick up some picks?
And that's the one I definitely put at number three for me. Because, let me say that it depends on how far you're looking to go back.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the way things are set up, if Matthews, Robinson, Clowney are off the board,
mm-hmm.
when you're picking at six,
there's a lot, if that's the case, there's a lot of trade value. That number six pick is super valuable.
Super valuable. If you're not in love with Khalil Mack, and if you're not in love with Anthony Barr, who I think Anthony Barr is going to fall a little bit when all is said and done.
Yeah.
If you're not in love with either one of those guys, then trading back becomes a very attractive prospect. It's just where.
Yeah.
How far are you willing to go back? Because there's going to be some really good value available right at the end of, or not at the end, but, I'll say at the end of the teens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at 17, 18, 19, 20, and a little bit beyond, I think there's going to be some good value there. Like if you're looking at a tackle, like a Zach Martin could be there, you know.
Yeah.
But it depends on what you're looking for. Yeah. You laugh at Zach
Martin? We've not discussed this at length, but I know you and I both have been playing the draft simulator game online.
Yes. And if you – look, folks, it is addictive.
I love the front office stuff in general.
Yeah. I'm a draft nerd, so like it's – but there's these mock simulators, and if you haven't tried them, tweet me or Daniel. We'll send you a link.
All about it. But I laugh because Zach Martin is a guy that I kind of like, and I think he'd be a great fit for the Falcons. He's clearly a first-round guy. He does not, and we were talking about this earlier too. We were laughing. I was like, I feel like I've done this similar like thousands of times. Like I say this with, you know, facetiously, but I feel like I'm as prepared as TD, you know. But but Zach Martin doesn't get past number 19 with Miami.
Never.
In any draft.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to interrupt you, but so who do you pick? What Is there something that you've done consistently in your mock drafts that...
Honestly, I've had Clowney fall to me quite a bit. Yeah. And if he doesn't, I take Mac. Because I love Mac. I think he's a top prospect, and we're going to talk a little bit mm-hmm. about him later on. But I like him. I think he's got just as much upside as Jadeveon Clowney, just with less attention on him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a guy that I always end up selecting. So
you stay at six?
I stay at six, yeah. I don't think there's been a case where I've traded back.
Really? Oh man, I'm.
See, you're I'm wheeling dealing. With trading. You're wheeling dealing, but it's like I said last week on the podcast. You weren't here, but you know, if you look at history, there's not a lot of trade back in Thomas Dimitroff, and that's
what no, you're right.
Away from that scenario. But I think, like I said, those top three guys that I would think right now are would be your top three guys, which would be Robinson, would be Matthews, would be Clowney. If those three guys aren't there, and again, if you're not in love with Mac or Barr and you want to trade back, I think that's a very attractive possibility.
Yeah. It just those second round picks, it's just like a gold mine in the second round, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, with all, like, I don't, all of those juniors that have come out, I don't know if it's, I think it's the highest number they've had in the draft, but
it's like 90 some, 90.
Yeah. It's a high, high number, along with all the senior talent. So, I mean, people say this is a really, really deep, draft from a quality perspective in a lot of places.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a lot of value in some of the mid rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, you know, trading up again, to go back to that scenario, ends up again being a less attractive possibility.
Exactly.
But I still believe, I mean, and this is the thing, and I think that Thomas subscribes to this philosophy. If there's a guy you want, you go get him.
Yeah.
And we saw it with this guy, Julio.
Yep.
You wanted Julio, so you went and got him.
In hindsight, I mean, that was seems like the right move.
It absolutely was.
Yeah.
And so you sacrifice some of what you sacrifice. You know, you're going to be second guessed and all that other stuff. But that move worked out.
Yeah.
But now you're not talking about going as far. You're talking about probably, again, you know, you got Les Snead at number two, and you got Dave Caldwell at number three. And that's a really good place to be.
Yeah, you're right.
For the Falcons, Thomas Dimitroff, who has working relationships with both of those guys. I mean, looks like a pretty good place. And, and you're going to give up that number two pick. Yeah. It's just what else are you giving up after that? You know, so... But this is one of those things that we're going to be debating for quite a while. So I'm glad we got a start on it. I don't know that we necessarily rank them, but I think you know, these are interesting scenarios because there's so much. We used to talk back when the Falcons would be drafted at number 27 or 28. There's so much that happens before you get to that point that you can't really truly predict what's going to happen. At six here, you think there's fewer scenarios, but there's really not. There are a lot of different ways that things could go, and it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
I was curious, just like a brief moment yesterday, and I was thinking about some things. I was curious. I wonder, like, I guess, I don't know, never mind. I was just wondering about all the different scenarios, like the number of scenarios or draft options that they exist at a certain pick. You know, like how, like what's the number? I mean, in the first place you'd have to start, I guess, is how many seniors are there, and how many players are available, you know, eligible to be drafted. But anyway,
this is sounding more and more like math.
Yeah,
and I'm just
I quickly gave up on the idea, but I was just curious.
Thank
about
goodness, because
the numbers there.
You're not going to get me doing math right now.
Yeah,
no way. All right. Well, let's move on to our mock monitor debate. So the mock monitor version 2.0 came out on Tuesday, and Greg Robinson, still the top selection among the experts that we're taking a look at. A
mm-hmm.
Couple of guys starting to really make a move, Clowney being one of them.
Yeah.
But these two guys are really similar.
Mm-hmm.
And
in some ways, they're similar. In one way, or a hand. Never mind.
Yeah, they're kind of similar, and they're kind of not.
Just get us in that.
No, you're fine. They're kind of similar. They're kind of not.
They both play linebacker.
Well, they do. And they both don't wear glasses. So it's uncanny. So Anthony Barr, Khalil Mack. The question is, based off of this week's Mock Monitor, which 70% of the fans, more than 70% of the fans voted that they want Clowney.
Yeah.
Okay. But these guys are active participants among the experts when it comes to the Falcons in mock drafts around the web. So Anthony Barr, Khalil Mack, who you got? Between the two.
Between the two.
Those are your two guys. Let's say that's the scenario.
Yeah.
Okay. Matthews is gone. Robinson's gone. Clowney's gone. Here are you two guys. Who you taking?
I mean, you got to take Khalil Mack. It seems like it to me. What is the old saying? A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, right?
Yes.
And we're not professional talent evaluators, so we don't know. But Mack looks like the guy that's a sure bet. And Daniel Jeremiah said it from NFL.com. He calls him the surest player in the draft. As far as a sure thing, a guy that's going to come in and be productive, you know, lead your defense and make plays.
Yeah.
And he's made plays for his entire career. The thing I'm worried – I get concerned about with Anthony Barr is that he used to be a running back. Now he's played 2 years as a defensive end slash linebacker. Extremely productive in a big conference, Pac-12.
Yeah.
But – yeah, you know, it's Falcons have had some history drafting some players like that in the past as well. Sure. I think that's it's a tricky place to be.
Sure.
Tricky decision.
I also see, you know, if these are your two guys, then I'm going with Mack as well. I think that if Clowney didn't exist, mm-hmm. this is the guy who's getting all the defensive attention as far as the draft goes. I feel like he's done enough at Buffalo, and a lot of people are going to frown on the competition level and things like that. But this guy basically was able to do what Jadeveon Clowney did, only with routine triple teams, constantly being targeted because he was the player out there. Now, look, you can make that same argument against Clowney.
Right.
You know, teams targeted him. He had a lot that he had to try to overcome, especially in his junior year. But what Mack was able to do with that amount of attention, and if you want to argue competition level, take a look at his tape against Ohio State
because
he destroyed in that game. So that's one of the things that I look at with him. Anthony Barr, to me, great talent, explosive.
Looks the part, you know.
He looks the part. He passes the eye test.
Yeah.
Every time I see him, though, the name that keeps coming up to me is Aaron Maben.
Okay.
And here's a guy who looks the part, looks like he should be, or a Vernon Golston is another guy.
Yeah.
Just looks the part on paper, should be that player. But I think Barr's done way more in his college career in the 2 years you're talking about that he really played a defensive role. Mm-hmm. I think he's got the speed to get around the edge. He's certainly big enough to take on some tackles and things like that. I don't know. There's just something about him that screams that to me.
I understand. Absolutely. You want – it's just like in any profession, you know. If you have a choice between, the four-year college graduate and the junior college graduate, nothing against junior college, but just that 2 years versus that 4 years, I mean, that's a big difference. And you look back and I wrote about Khalil Mack last night or yesterday, and it's on the site today. The draft spotlight. Even as a freshman, he was leading the team in sacks, and tackles for loss, and he was like a second team like All American. Like Sports Illustrated named him second team honorable mention All American or something like that.
As a
freshman, redshirt freshman in 2010.
Now, don't get me wrong. You know, I think Barr is a good selection. I just have more questions about him, and maybe it's just that I need to like sit down and look at more tape of him and research him a little more, but there in my initial impressions of doing the research that I have on him, I just feel like there might be more questions about whether it's his durability at that spot, his viability at that spot. How do you use him is kind of my question.
Yeah.
You know, if you bring him into this system in particular, because you've already got a hybrid player in Croy Bierman, well, is that what you're looking for on the other side as well?
Yeah.
So I don't know. For me, I think he projects way more as an outside linebacker, and I think Khalil Mack can project way more as a defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
Although I could see,
yeah, absolutely,
that switching up, you know. But I don't know. For me, Mack is just he's more of the kind of guy I would want.
Absolutely.
But I don't know that you necessarily would go wrong with either one. You know, if Anthony Barr ends up here, we welcome him with open arms.
Without a doubt.
I mean,
it's the unknown of the draft. You
that's
know?
Right.
You do the best you can to select the players that you think are going to be the best fits. And so, like, when I think about that scenario, again, it's just based on what we've seen of Khalil Mack, he just seems like a more I wouldn't even call it a safer pick. It's just the wiser.
I think he's more complete for what you want.
Yeah.
You know, you want a guy who can rush the passer, who can put some pressure on the quarterbacks, and who can be a defensive force. For me, just watching the two, I see more of that in Mack.
I agree.
But there are a lot of great qualities about Barr, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Again, you know, you and I aren't – we're not paid for
– We sit here and talk about
scouting evaluations. Reason, nobody's asking us who we think is in the building anyway.
If they asked, I would happily give them my opinion.
I would just be like, look, you guys know way more than I do.
I would probably say I have a couple of questions to ask first.
Yeah. But, you know, it's an interesting debate, and there's certainly a lot of them to have here as we continue on.
I mean, if the Falcons ended up with Khalil Mack and could keep that second pick, that second round pick, and maybe even get another one. But
great point.
That's a
great point.
That's a cornerstone. I mean, he's a good piece.
Yeah,
and I think that's what you really need. You need some pieces.
Your ideal scenario, if we want to get back into scenarios, is you get a first pick with a guy that you really like, whether it's Mack, whether it's Clowney, whoever you like, and you get to keep your second round pick.
That's, yeah, exactly. I think if the Falcons could come away with a situation like that where they get like a top one or two player at a position that they really want to fill at that number six spot, I think you'll be in good shape.
Yeah. Good talk.
Yeah, man.
It's good to have you back.
Man, it's great to be back, and I'm so glad that we're talking about the draft. And
we'll be doing it from here on out, so we'll give you all you can handle, bro. All
right, cool, man.
All right.
So we got to do some mock drafts here pretty soon.
Pretty soon we might do that.
Cool.
Can
we get one of those things that like we slide our fingers around and move names around and stuff?
Well, no, not that. We're not getting that.
Can we get a big board?
No, we're not getting a big board either.
All right.
You can have this, though.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Our trusty Falcon.
That's right. Well, thanks for joining us again here on the Falcon Cast podcast. We will talk to you again next week.